listening to Fly Travel Radio here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Melissa Rodway, and today I have Jonathan Van Bilsen with me. There are so many things to put behind Jonathan's name. He's a TV host of a show called Photos and Travel for Rogers. He's an award-winning photographer, an author, a columnist, a keynote speaker. He's visited, at minimum, we'll say 107 countries, and he has plenty to talk about. And I'm pretty sure I missed something in that long string of things that Jonathan is doing and has done. So welcome to Fly, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to speak with you, and it is very nice to talk to somebody who is from my hometown. I was born and raised in Port Perry, so it's a thrill to have such a wonderful travel icon from my hometown. So welcome.
Oh, you're too kind.
Yes,
you're too kind. Thank you.
Well, it's a fun little town, isn't it? So we have to give it its credit where it's due. So, Jonathan, before we get into the many, many topics we have to talk about today, I wanted to hear about what your career is right now, your TV show, Photos and Travel. Just give us a summary of what you're all about in your day-to-day at the moment.
I'm all over the map, actually. I'm doing a TV show, as you mentioned, Photos and Travel. It's a half-hour show. It airs once a month. It's on YouTube as well, for those who don't have access to Rogers Network. The show basically takes trips that I've taken from around the world, uses my photos and my videos, and puts it into a half-hour show. I narrate it. I do a little intro on a green screen at the beginning. And it's doing very, very well. The views are quite up there. YouTube views are now in excess of 12,000 per month, which is good. So it's starting to pick up. We're commissioned to do about 60 shows altogether. We've done 15, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. It actually takes me back to a lot of my trips and memories from some of those trips. So that's good. And the other two shows that I do are talk shows, just interviewing people from primarily Durham region and so forth. A few from outside of that area, but primarily it's a Durham region. And then I still take pictures once in a while. Port Perry's 150th birthday is coming up this June.
Oh, wow.
So I'm emceeing a show what we're doing, but I'm also putting together a historic book called Port Perry Past and Present. So I'm taking old photographs from way back when, and I'm trying to photograph the exact same location from today and then comparing the two and putting a little blurb together. So that's fun.
That is fun.
So that, and you know, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, like everyone else.
Yeah. Trying to fill in the gaps. So again, your show can be found on Rogers, Photos and Travel, and on right. YouTube as well.
That's right. If you go to YouTube, you either Google my name or you look for Photos and Travel, and that's photos with an N in the middle of travel.
Gotcha.
That makes sense?
Yep, so. Photos and Travel. Okay. Right. So Jonathan, what I like about you, I mean, I just met you. There's lots to like about you. But even what you were just talking about, it's really interesting because for COVID, I feel like some people have been really stranded, right? I mean, physically and mentally. If they can't go anywhere, they don't really know how to feed that adventurous part of their lives. Many are discovering their own backyards and exploring Ontario and doing what they have to do. But when I went to your website, I was really interested in how you find adventure everywhere. So even in a town like Port Perry, you're interviewing really interesting people, you're digging up history. And that's a really important thing, I think, for people to realize that it's not always about jumping on a plane or discovering a new exotic location. I mean, there's interesting people right around us. There are stories, there's history, there's adventure everywhere. So I really, really appreciated that part of your website, actually.
Well, thank you. One of the things I think that I really enjoy in traveling is meeting people, because it's all about the people in different locales. And in Port Perry, I've been very fortunate. I write 5 columns a month for newspapers and magazine, and I have been able to interview people that are local, but that have some significance to the town. So whether it be a family that's had a business here for over 100 years, whether it is a television celebrity, you know, whatever the case might be, it's very, very interesting to get into people's stories and find out what their lives are all about. And by doing that, what I'm finding is people are coming up to me and saying, wow, you know, I've known this guy for 20 years. I never knew that about him. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. Everybody's got a history. Everybody's got a book in them. So it's great to be able to take some of that and, you know, share it.
Absolutely. Where did your passion for storytelling come from?
Well, first of all, I'm Dutch, right? So I was born with the gift of gab. So that helps a little bit. I think part of my issue was when I first came to Canada, I couldn't speak any English, obviously. So for the first few years, I had to look up words, I had to pen things, and I started writing a story when I was about 14 or 15. And it ended up being 1,000 pages. And I spent most of the time writing some words down, then looking up to see if they made sense in an effort to help me with learning to speak English properly and things like that. So I just really started to enjoy the idea of telling the story, as you mentioned. When you're traveling a fair bit, you're on airplanes, you've got a lot of time, especially in the 80s. You know, they didn't have the screens in the back of the seats. So there were no iPads. So the only movie was from a flip down thing that they would, you know, turn on every now and then, and sometimes it worked.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of time. So I started writing just stories. There were spy stories, spy novels. And I wrote the first one, I think, in 1982. It was published in 1996.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you've ever been in the publishing industry in this country or anywhere, I guess now, publishing a book is through a publisher is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not something I thought, hey, I'll write the book, I'll put it out there, and there'll be a lineup of publishers. So I wrote the book, I put it out there, and there was a lineup of rejection letters. So finally, I met someone, I think through a cocktail party, who had published a few books, and he put me in touch with his publisher. And that's how the book got published. And I think I was contracted to do 7 of them. But unfortunately, the publisher went out of business after 4. So that was the end of that.
Oh, no. But that's a good start. 4 is pretty good.
It is. And I've now got them on Amazon. So it's awesome. I mean, I'm famous. I'm on Amazon.
So are you self-publishing on Amazon?
Well, the books are published. The publisher gave me back the raw data in a format that I could easily convert into PDF, which is what Amazon requires. So it took me about maybe an hour to do each book, like to just reformat it and upload it. I tried looking at some of them. I've never read any of the books I've written. I just, you know, I just can't do that. Just like when I do a show, I can't look at it. You know, I just can't.
Yeah.
So I just, I looked at a couple and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe I wrote this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good. It's fun.
You're absolutely right. The publishing game is not easy. I think often when I'm in a bookstore, I can't believe how lucky all these people are to be published, because it is no easy feat. So how old were you when you moved to Canada?
I was just over 8, just 8 and a half, something like that.
So would you say that moving here was what inspired you to be adventurous? Were your parents adventurous? Were they big travelers? Where did that part come from?
I don't really have an answer to that question because I don't know. I assume because my parents packed up what they had and moved to Canada, there must have been some adventure in there because it was a new country with a different language. We certainly didn't have a lot of money. It's not like visiting a country now, you know, mm-hmm. like to communicate with relatives at home would be either by letter, but then cassettes came out, so you could do it by tape, or you could make a phone call at $9 a minute,
right?
Which, you know, when an average wage was $55-$60 a week, you know, that's just unheard of. So there must have been some adventure in that, in the blood somewhere. And being from Europe, the opportunity to visit different countries was there. I mean, I was born in the south of the Netherlands, and we were 2 miles from, or 2 kilometers, I guess, from the German border, a couple kilometers from the Belgian border. So, you know, trips throughout Germany were quite common, mm-hmm. as well as Belgium, Luxembourg, that area. So, you know, when I came to Canada, at 8 years old, I think my passport had in and around 5 or 6 countries in it already.
Wow.
So, you know, so it was kind of cool. And I didn't really count countries until, you know, maybe a few years ago when I heard there was an award. So I thought, ooh, I need that.
Yes, we'll get to that. Very interesting that you bring that up. So did you end up going to university or college for anything media related?
Yes.
Okay, so what did you study?
I did. I was going to become a photographer, I think, from the get-go. I took 4 years of it, combination of Seneca and Ryerson. And it was photography, video, whatever the equivalent of video, 16 millimeter film at that time. Video was just coming out. In fact, I think they were on 1-inch reel-to-reel video recorders. And so I took that, and obviously that's how I got my passion for photography and, you know, that sort of thing. And travel just felt good along with it.
Yeah. And so when you started to become an avid traveler, were you traveling for work or were you traveling for fun? How did this all start happening for you?
Combination. I think my very first trip that I, you know, aside from coming to this country, was to go back to Europe when I was 17. That was my first trip. And that's when I really, really got a taste for traveling, for flying, for the whole concept of, you know, seeing different places. And for some reason, I felt like a stranger in my own country, obviously, because I'd, you know, spent most of my time in Canada. And there have been small trips in Canada as well. But I developed a real interest in people and the locations and a real respect for people. And I think I've gained that throughout all my travels. I've never lost that. You know, whenever I go somewhere, above all, it makes me appreciate where I live and what I have. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, aside from maybe two or three countries, Australia, New Zealand kind of thing, there is no place like Canada on this planet. You know, nobody has what we have. As much as we complain about it, I mean, that's our nature.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, so that sort of stayed with me. And I just started seeing places and visiting and, you know.
What's your style of travel? What kind of travel do you do?
I'm kind of like a five-star room service, hot showers, you know, fancy lobby, good internet, traveling. Hostels in that are not my thing. I don't do two-star hotels. You know, some of the places I've been, you wouldn't want to even consider anything below five-star. So what I do basically is I have a person who has contacts all over the world for drivers and guides and plan out the trip myself with the destination. So if I'm going to a new country, like I was in Romania 2 years ago, never been to Romania, didn't know anything about Romania other than Dracula's from Romania, which, by the way, is a myth. I discovered that when I was there. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Why, where is Dracula really from?
The mind of a guy named Bram Stoker. It's fictional. So yeah, I learned that when I was in Transylvania. I had packed garlic cloves and a wooden stake and all that ready to go, but unfortunately I didn't need it. But not knowing anything about Australia, the first thing Romania, the first thing I would do is go through the travel books, like the tour books, like Global Tours, Inside Travel, that sort of thing, and see where they go, because obviously they're going to go to the hot spots, right? The exciting parts. So that's the first thing I would do. So I'd start to map out a trip. And then once I have it kind of, you know, decided on what I want to see, I will look for hotels and then put it out to this lady at Your Journeys Travel. And then she will source a guide and a driver or a driver guide, and we'll put the trip to them, and then they will come back with their recommendations. So for example, I was in Argentina a few years ago, and I was supposed to go and do something, but the guide beforehand said, we can't do that because this place is closed on such and such a day. So that sort of thing helps a lot. I get comments like, you know, this hotel is wonderful, but it's about 10 kilometers from downtown. So what do you want to do in your evenings? You know, things like that. So the next step then would be to kind of, you know, formulate it and narrow it down and drill it into something that makes a lot of sense. Always insist on good Western style meals, you know, so I can always eat local if I want to, but at the end of the day, I need my grilled cheese sandwich. So yeah, so that's pretty well how I do it, how I put it together. And because for me, the development of the tour is part of the journey.
Right. The planning.
Yeah. And you know, there's pros and cons to everything. The way I do it, if something goes wrong, I can only blame myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I look after my own flights and so forth. I've used travel agents here and there. But depending on where you go, I find it sometimes difficult if a travel agent has not been there or experienced that area. It's difficult for them to recommend things, right? So they have to depend on third-party people. So it makes it easier.
And you're not a cruise ship person, and you're not a group traveler, is what you're saying.
Well, group traveling, no, because, you know, you can tell from my personality, I'm not a people person. The issue I have with group traveling is you're always dependent on the lowest common denominator.
Right.
I like to get up early in the morning, catch morning light, go and do what I want to do, take pictures, do what I want to do, sort of thing. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm having a conversation with a bunch of travelers and we're sitting in Istanbul and everybody's talking about their grandchildren in New York City, that kind of thing. I don't want, you know, plus I don't like to sort of deviate from what I want to do. And when you travel with other people in a group, you're really dependent on, you know, what the overall census is. I remember a trip I did to Turkey and I took a day tour or something in a coach, and I wanted to see the Dolmabahce Palace, which is just a spectacular palace, but nobody goes there, and I don't know why. So they were kind of supposed to go to some place, and I convinced most of the people on the bus that they wanted to go to this other place, and ended up rerouting the bus into tour guide, and it wasn't very happy, but we got to see the palace. So, and as far as cruise ships go, I think cruising is wonderful for people who want to do it. I've never been on a cruise ship, so I can't honestly say that I'm not a fan of it because I've never experienced it. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure that the first day I would miss the boat coming back from whatever excursion, you know? So that includes, that implies a lot of helicopter flights and a lot of expense. Also, the idea of gaining, you know, 25, 30 kilos on every trip doesn't thrill me either. Mm-hmm. So I don't like the idea of having a structure to that degree. Mm-hmm. I'm good with structure, but I like it to be my structure. So I don't want to, okay, 9 o'clock, we line up here and we take the ramp and there's the buses waiting. And we're going to go to see, you know, Nassau in the Bahamas for 4 hours. And these are the stores I recommend. Here's where you should go for lunch. And please don't be late because the boat won't wait.
Yeah,
you know?
I gotcha.
That sort of thing. It's just not my style. I mean, I think, as I say, it's great for people who don't like packing and unpacking all the time, people who like to have a good selection of food, people who want to have social interaction with other individuals. It's great for that. Mm-hmm. It's just not my style. That's all.
I want to go back to the grilled cheese sandwich. So I read on your site that after, is it still 107 countries or are there more?
It is. It's actually, you know, and I just checked this the other day. It's actually 106.
Oh, dear.
I was supposed to go to Korea. I was supposed to go to Korea last February, a year ago February, now that I think of it. And I had to cancel 3 days before, but I'd already put 107 countries out. So it's 106. I'm scheduled now to go to Korea in September, the same trip. So we'll see how that goes. So
we won't update your website yet.
Yeah, there's no prize for being 106 or 107. So I'm good with it.
What was interesting, I thought, having gone to all of these countries, is that you still stick by these strict rules of not eating peeled fruit and vegetables, right, and you don't drink any of the water. So you still stick by that. You've never been sick.
I've never been sick. I was sick once in Mexico, where I was halfway through a hamburger and I looked at it and it was really pink inside.
Yeah.
And my tummy didn't like that too much. And I had a couple, maybe 3-4 hours of wooziness, but that's the only time. I have never been sick. I'm very careful. I've been injected with everything.
Yeah.
Including Pfizer. And and this is over the years too. I mean, I remember needles that go in your butt, for lack of a better word, that were about 3 inches long with some sort of gamma globulin or something. And it just, you know, it kills you for a couple of days, but you don't get whatever the disease it prevents. And things like that. Typhoid needles used to, for some reason, actually give you the illness for one evening. So lots of things like that. I never drink water that's not in bottles that are sealed.
Right.
If they bring it to the table and it's uncapped, I will not drink it. I'll ask for another one. I don't eat fruit that I can't peel. And I was in China many, many years ago. And I remember in a restaurant, sort of a restaurant, because they didn't really exist at the time. There were people's houses that had been renovated a bit. And I remember going to the bathroom, and on my way, I got lost and I went the wrong way. And there was a fellow sitting outside with a big bucket of water, and he was washing the lettuce in it, which was fine. And then a lady came along and she reached in and she pulled some clothes out, wrung them out, and hung them up on a clothesline. I looked at that and I thought, whoa, there's no way I'm doing that. No.
That is awful.
So it really put me off the salad. So I just learned, I was in Paris, 2 years ago, and I was in line for a museum, and there was a fellow selling water bottles, like the I was going to hold it up, but obviously on radio, you can't see it, but just a regular water bottle. And I was really thirsty and I was going to get one. And the fellow behind me tapped me on the shoulder and he said, you know, I would suggest you not do that. And I looked at him and he said, he's with the police and he was just visiting. But he said, there's a new scam now going around where what they do is they take the water bottle, they fill it up with whatever kind of water they can find, put the cap back on and use a couple of drops of crazy glue on the cap. So when you uncap it, you get that snap as if it's sealed.
Yeah.
So he said, only buy it in stores. So
yikes.
Yeah. So things like that just, continually happen. Plus I'm not a picky eater. I've eaten some weird things, but by choice, not by accident.
Yeah. Yeah. And you still avoid ice as well in your drinks.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, it waters down drinks, right? So you don't want to do that the best of times.
But yes, good point.
I mean, ice is water, obviously. And I don't care where you are. I hear people saying, well, this is a 5-star hotel. It's nothing but the best. To me, no matter what the establishment is, you're only as good as the lowest common denominator.
Right.
Who works there.
Okay, so you have some other really interesting tips. The one where you bring a plastic bag for your TV remote. I like that one. I had never thought of that, but that's a good one. Do you remember that from your website?
Oh, right. right. Yeah. So you don't get the germs from the TV remote. That's more of a COVID thing, like recently. I wash my hands, I think, on average, the same as everybody else. Now I'm washing them like, 4 times an hour. So people are more concerned now about cleanliness. So what I do actually, if I don't always remember the plastic bag, but most hotels have hair, we call those things you put on your head when you shower, or a shower cap, I guess.
Yep.
Which I also use for a camera. It's great for cameras too.
Oh.
If you're using a 35 mil type camera, obviously a phone, it doesn't work, but you can put it over the body of the entire camera and just keep the lens, like the opening of the lens exposed through the front of that shower cap.
Nice.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what other unique tips might you have for people?
I think one of the things that's always fun to do, which helps a lot, is if you get to a country where English is not the common language and you're traveling alone, you would go into a newsstand and just pick up a local newspaper and put it under your arm. Because if you're walking through Sofia in Bulgaria and you've got a local newspaper, people just assume that you're a local.
Right.
Nobody's going to think you're a tourist.
Mm.
Why would a tourist from Canada be reading a Bulgarian newspaper? That kind of thing. So always grab one, stick it under your arm, and walk around with it.
That's a good one. I like that.
What else? When you're taking photos, this is a great little tip I learned. Gosh, I think Ansel Adams taught me this. When you take a photograph of people and they're wearing baseball caps or a hat, you tend to get shadows on their face, right? So what you do, because it's digital, what you do is you turn your camera upside down. So the flash will fire from the bottom up and will flood their face with light instead of from the top down where you get the shadow from the cap.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's always a good one. I don't know, what else? Travel safe. Don't be silly when you travel, obviously. I always have a habit of taking my credit cards, my passport, and whatever I have, and I put it on the same place in every hotel I go. Every hotel seems to have a bed and a dresser in front of the bed on your way out the door, and it's always in that corner. So if there's a fire alarm in the middle of the night, I don't have to worry about where's my passport, where's this, where's that sort of thing. So I always do that. And make a photocopy of your passport or take a photograph of it on your phone and keep it somewhere.
Yes.
The part where the photos are, because if you lose your passport and you want to get a new one, no matter where you are, you have to prove who you are. And that's very hard to do if you don't have a passport.
Yes.
So by taking that picture of that page, which has all the, the photograph and all that stuff on it, you can go to any Canadian consulate or embassy anywhere in the world and within 24 hours get a new passport. Just don't put that in your passport when you take the photocopy.
Jonathan, in a non-COVID world, how often are you traveling around? How many months of the year would you be gone?
Well, I went to Toronto a few times, so that really, I guess, would count. I kind of slowed down around 2007. That was my busiest year. I did 107 trips.
Wow.
Some of them were short, like some were just to New York and that. I'm just trying to think. It was 107 flights I took that year. That's what it was.
107 flights. That's quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, what would be the longest duration? Is it 2 to 3 weeks? Are you gone for a month?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Okay.
2 to 3 weeks tends to be a good time to see what you want to see. I mean, you can go to a country or a city and you can spend 6 months there and still not see everything. I mean, I've been in Canada for a number of years and I still haven't seen everything there is to see, right? So you have to kind of decide where you're going to draw the line and when is enough enough.
Yes, absolutely. And so after all of these years, how has your perspective on travel changed? Has it changed? Do you still feel the same way you did about it when you first started?
I don't think so. I'm becoming more cynical. I think like anything, the more you do it, the more you start to not enjoy the aspects of what you used to enjoy. So for example, the very first time I went to Asia, I would have been in my 30s, I guess, and it was pretty exciting. Like it was amazing, you know, because it's culture, it's a different religion, it's totally, totally different. I've since been, I don't know, I couldn't tell you how many Asian countries, but a lot. And the idea now of going to Korea, you know, it's okay. It'll be interesting. But it's not like that thrilling, oh my gosh, look at this, look at that.
Yeah.
It's going to be more mundane. So I think as you get older, you get cynical. I've been to Paris, I think maybe, I don't know, 10, 12 times, something like that. So the Eiffel Tower is great, but how many times can you look at the Eiffel Tower?
Yeah.
So things like that. The more you do anything, I think you become a little more desensitized and such. And I'm not one of these people who needs different thrills, so I'm not going to go and, you know, zip line from the Empire State Building to the Rockefeller Center or anything like that in a hurry. I did that once, not in New York. I ziplined once, and that was enough, I think, for anybody's lifetime. Like,
fair enough.
It's like bungee jumping. Yeah. You know, I'm scared to death of heights, so I've never done bungee jumping. I thought about doing it from maybe a chair onto the floor of a hotel room, but that was the limit.
What about flying? Because personally, I used to love flying and now it's not something I love anymore. I mean, we do it because we have to, but how do you feel about planes?
Well, it scares me to death because, you know, and I've had over thousands of flights and, you know, I'm sitting in a little box that's built by the lowest bidder, 30,000 feet in the air. I don't have a problem with flying. Traveling is becoming a pain in the neck. I think post 9/11 really changed things. Before then, you know, there was no issues as far as security goes. There really wasn't. Now, of course, everybody's paranoid and there are a lot of people out there that want to do harm. So it is becoming more and more treacherous. I know I was hauled off a flight in Johannesburg. Actually, it was delayed by a number of hours because there was a bomb threat against the plane. And, you know, so they went through the whole thing. They frisked everybody. They went through everybody's luggage. A fine-tooth comb. I didn't find anything. So everybody's on the plane. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, like I've got 16 hours now ahead of me. I wonder when it's going to blow up.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah.
I've had a few instances, over the years. I've had a couple of pretty good instances with flying and it makes you a little bit more resilient, I think. It also, it scares you a little bit more too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never crashed though. Came close a couple of times, but never crashed.
That's petrifying. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I had an engine blowout over Edmonton, or from Edmonton to Toronto, an engine blew, and it was just a loud bang, right? And the plane shook a little bit, and then the pilot came on to explain that we had to make an emergency landing in Regina, which was pretty exciting, because I don't know if I'd been there before, but the funny part about that was there was a priest sitting next to me, and we had chatted a bit before, and he asked if I wanted him to hear my confession. So I said, well, Father, I'll tell you, why don't we just give it a few more minutes and just see what happens? Because, you know, I might be okay.
So, oh, wow. That's hysterical.
Yeah. I could tell you lots of stories. I mean, you know, this is a 4-hour show, so we can do lots of stories.
You can pick one story if you want, but then we're going to move on to a new topic.
The one that comes to mind, I think, that I had a lot of fun with was flying from Moncton back to Toronto in the dead of winter. And we're at the airport in Moncton and we're, you know, 25,000th in line to get de-iced. Finally got de-iced and an alarm went off on the plane and the flight attendants are running all over the place. And it turns out there was a fellow in the bathroom who decided to have a cigarette. So, and I was sitting in the front row, so I had a sort of a beeline to the bathroom. I could see this guy and they opened the door up and he's sitting there having a cigarette. So of course we had to go through the whole thing again. And then it went ready to take off. We're on the runway and we aborted the takeoff, which is scary. I've had that a couple of times. It's not a fun thing because you don't know if you're going to stop in time or not.
Oh my God.
And apparently there was something wrong with a gauge in the instrument panel, which is no big deal. I'm sure they have lots of spare gauges. So this was before cell phones. So I had no way of calling my wife to say, yeah, I'm not going to be home at 8 o'clock. It's going to be more like 10:30, 11 o'clock. And then we finally got off the ground and there was an issue with the plane. We had to land in Ottawa. So I got home, I think about 4 a.m. You know, and appreciate, you couldn't get off the plane. You have no way of contacting anybody. So, you know, people at home are kind of like wondering what's going on.
Yeah.
But that was a good experience. I always remember seeing that fellow sitting there, you know, with a cigarette in his hand. God, it was cute.
Not a care in the world. Is your wife a big traveler as well?
Yeah, she's gone on most of the trips with me.
Oh, that's nice. It's nice to share that.
Yeah, absolutely. Keeps me in line.
I'm sure. So during COVID, I mean, this has been a long break for people that are avid travelers. Are you missing it, or was it nice to have the pressure off a little bit?
No, not at all. No, I miss it. I miss it a lot. Absolutely.
What parts do you miss? Like, did it make you rethink what you love about travel? Where are you at a year and a bit later?
I think the best part about traveling is the learning experience. Different sites, different places, different things. I've been very fortunate having been to all the countries I've been to and having seen the things I've seen. I watch a lot of travel shows other than Rick Steves. you know, and if you're looking at the pyramids, for example, I can picture exactly where they're located, how they're situated, what they're talking about when they're talking about the layout of and stuff like that. So that's helped a lot. But, you know, like Korea, for example, I don't have a clue what's going on there because I didn't get to go.
Mm-hmm.
So the travel show has helped a lot. And that came as a fluke. They just reached out to me and asked if I wanted to, because I've read a travel column and have for about 12, 15 years now. And so they reached out to me and asked if I was interested in doing a show using my photos and video. So I kind of said, yes, under certain conditions. I want to do the entire production. I want to write it. I want to narrate it. You know, I want to do everything. You know, we did it in the studio for a few months, and then I end up with a sound studio, green screen studio in my basement, totally self-sufficient with a teleprompter and everything. So I record the stuff there, and then I edit it myself into a half-hour show. And I've learned a lot about it. You know, I've done video editing for a long time, so I have a handle on some of it. So each show gets better, and it's fun to watch. I still look the same, unfortunately. That hasn't changed. I've tried to improve that, but that's not working. So that's how I got through COVID, or getting through COVID.
How do you decide where you're going on your travel show each week? You're just picking from your past, or...
Yeah, I made a list of 60 shows, 60 places that I know I can put a show together on because I have enough video and photos. So I did that, and it looks fairly professional. A friend of mine, Lance Brown, you may know him from CTV mm-hmm. days. He was there for about 75 years, I think. And he does the intros and such. We've got some sponsors, so there's some, you know, short commercials in there. And it's just fun to go through. Like, the one I'm working on now is New Orleans. I'm starting that tomorrow. And, you know, I mean, I've been to New Orleans, I think, three or four times. But all the stuff, as I'm looking at the photos and the video, it's all coming back to me. Things that you forgot,
yeah.
Right? I'm sure you have the same, and everyone else does. You know, you go to places and you forget, or they runs together.
So as someone who has been in this industry for so long, and you've been to so many places... I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, none of us do, but obviously travel is going to be a bit different. So what do you think about post-COVID travel life?
I suspect it's going to be a lot different. I think hotels are going to be offering different faces, if you like. They're going to be much cleaner. There's going to be much more emphasis on cleanliness. The big concern people will have is traveling to places like Asia, because that's where it originated, in China, obviously. So people will be leery about that. I think you'll see a lot more national travel as compared to international travel, and which is great in itself, because Canada is a beautiful country. And you know, whether you're looking at Pelee Rock, or you're doing the Cabot Trail, or you're climbing the Rockies, you know, there's so much for everybody in this country. Which would be great, especially for cities like Toronto that have hurt so much during this pandemic. So I think there'll be more homegrown travel. There'll be less adventurous type travel. Like, it's going to be a bigger gap between high-end adventure and touring type of adventure. So, I mean, I would be very leery for a long time to come, I think, about sitting in a bus in a foreign country, not knowing if the person next to me has been vaccinated. I'm pretty well convinced that COVID will never go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be with us forever, like the flu. And, you know, you'll have to have annual injections. But there's a lot of people who are opposed to being injected. So consequently, does that mean I'm sitting beside someone who hasn't? I spent 4 weeks in India a while ago. I can appreciate what they're going through, because you can visualize, right, based on what I saw, I can appreciate what they're going through there. I think it would be a long time before I went to India, if ever, you know. And I think many people feel that way. And there'll be different types of hotels, the Swiss stars hotels, you know, where million stars hotel, where you basically stay in a log cabin and you look up and you see all these stars. There'll be more of that kind of stuff where people are more individual. Cruising will be an interesting one. I think it'll come back. I think people will be a little bit hesitant about it. The smaller cruise ships, I think, will do better. And this is strictly my own opinion. Okay. So, you know, take it from that. But I think the smaller cruise ships will do well because they're less chance of spreading germs as such to larger places. But, you know, human nature, 3 or 4 years from now, this will all be history. And we'll be right back at it again, waiting for the next one, you know.
I think it's interesting. I agree with all that you're saying. And I think it's interesting because it's forcing the travel industry to get creative, to think of some new ways of drawing people in and adapting and pivoting to COVID. So I think that part will be interesting to see what they come up with. And already you're seeing it with even more flexible policies and procedures and cancellations. I mean, that was not part of the travel industry before, right? If you couldn't go, you were going to be penalized. So it is quite interesting that this industry has been hit very hard, but there could be some interesting things that come out of it.
Very much so. I think there'll be a cost associated with it.
Yes.
Somebody's got to pay for this, and there is no one other than the people. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be much more expensive to travel going forward. You know, so people will become more selective.
Yep, that's true. Sad, but true. Is there a part of the world that, I mean, you've been to 106 countries. Is there a part of the world that you're more drawn to than others? I can say for me, I'm very drawn to Latin American countries.
Are you?
Oh, very much so. And parts of Europe, definitely. Whereas other parts of the world, I like going, but I don't feel that same connection. So do you feel more inclined to some places than others?
Well, I certainly have a connection to Europe.
Right.
I enjoy Europe. I've hit every country now. So that's kind of nice. South America, I'm not really. I would say anywhere, because it's the excitement of not knowing what you're going to see and learning and meeting people and so forth. I think that's where the excitement comes from. The location is secondary to me. If you pick a country like France and you've never been, then yeah, of course, you're going to do the Eiffel Tower, the Arc de Triomphe, you know, the museums and so forth. But if you pick a country like Romania, what are you going to see? I don't know. There was no Dracula, so that was kind of shot down. So, you know, and it turned out to be one of the most beautiful countries I've been to. Like the Carpathian Mountains in Transylvania, one of the most beautiful regions in the world that I've ever visited. So pleasantly surprised. So I don't like to categorize into different regions or areas, because you may miss some things because you're not going to other places.
That's true.
You know,
you're right. It's good to go places without expectations. I mean, when you say you're going to France, there are already expectations because of the landmarks and whatever. But you're right about going somewhere where you're just kind of going with a fresh slate and fresh eyes.
Yep.
I think the thing about travel too, for me, is that you're so in the moment, right? I mean, that's the beauty of it. In our day-to-day, we are not in the moment, but it's that waking up in the morning, you have no idea what's going to happen to you till you go to bed again that night. That's the fun part of travel, I think, for me.
Yeah, although there should be some plan in place otherwise. It's like going to visit Toronto. If you've never been to Toronto and you come and visit, the first thing you're going to do is check out the CN Tower. You may do Casa Loma. Probably go to Yorkville and that, because that's what everybody does. Then when you leave, not knowing, you've missed places like Kensington Market, for example, you know, one of the nicest places we have, you know, Chinatown, yes, but like Koreatown or Little Italy or Greek Town, you know, all those places that you would never see. So every city, country, region has those. So as a traveler, I think to try and explore areas that are off the beaten path. And I don't mean off the beaten path as in, you know, go hiking for the Santiago, the Camino, or anything like that, you know. But just to go and explore what cities have to offer, you know, and that sort of thing.
It's true. Yeah. And there's some really interesting companies that have popped up. I interviewed a company called Locafy, where for a day you can hang out with a very local person from that city that shows you things that you're not going to find in the guidebook. So I think things like that, yeah, they're becoming more and more popular. Certainly of interest to me, because I find sometimes if you're only in a city for a day or two, it's very overwhelming, and it would be great to have someone who knows it to show you what the greatest spots are that are not in your guidebook.
Right. Watched a movie, if it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium. It's a great film from the 60s, and that's exactly it. I mean, you're on a whirlwind tour. A lot of people I talk to, they'll say, well, you know, I'm only going for a day or two here and there and there and there, so I know when I can go back, where to go back to. But nobody ever goes back to them.
Exactly.
You know, so.
So, Jonathan, you do a lot of presentations. People hire you to do speeches and all this fun stuff. So you have a lot of stories.
Yeah, I do presentations to groups like Probus, for example. You know, groups that have an interest generally in travel.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm sure over the last year, people have been asking you for stories because they're all trapped in their homes and adventureless. So can you...
Right.
Can you give us a couple stories of things that might entertain us until we can travel again?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they would entertain you, but they certainly were entertaining for me. I remember when I was in Egypt in the Valley of the Kings, I was just about to go into King Tut's tomb, and to take a video back then was you had to have a permit, which was very, very expensive. It was in and around $25 an hour everywhere you went. So what I did was I cut a hole in my travel bag and I put my camera through there and I shot from the hip, which I've done a couple of times here and there. But suddenly I heard somebody yelling behind me, you know, photograph, photograph. And I turned, and I guess they were security guards. And it was a little unfair, I thought, because they were dressed in the local garb. They didn't have, like, you know, security written on them or anything. So they were kind of hiding. I didn't think that was fair. So I ran and they started running and I kept running. And the Valley of the Kings is exactly that. It's a valley surrounded by mountains, and it's about maybe 45 degrees. So I'm not too excited about running because, you know, I may look like a jock, but I'm really not that great a shape. And I ran for about 20 minutes and they wouldn't stop. They just kept coming. In the Valley of the Kings, there are hundreds and hundreds of tombs that have been excavated. They're just empty caves, basically, in the mountainside. So I saw when I dove into it, and it was pitch black, and I just lay there, and finally they gave up chasing me. And then I heard a noise behind me, and I thought, oh my God, the only bear in Egypt is in the cave that I'm in. It turns out it was a family who lived there.
Oh my goodness.
And they invited me in. And basically it was a big room that had been cut out. There was a couple of chairs. There was an older fellow sitting in a chair. They had a couple of kids, and they offered me a drink, which is, I don't know if you've ever had poi in Hawaii. It's kind of like a combination of mud and I think dog food. I don't know. It tastes awful. They offered me that, and you know, you have to accept it. So I kind of chugged it down. It's like drinking mud. And then my tummy didn't feel good. So I asked if I could use the bathroom. Of course, you know, thinking, geez, I wonder where that would be. And it was outside around the corner. And I remember they wanted 25 cents, which was one Egyptian pound at the time, for every sheet of newspaper cut into a square for me to use, because all my stuff was in the car. And then eventually I made my way back. And as soon as I got back into the Valley of the Kings, the King Tut exhibit, the tomb had just closed for the day. So I never did get to see it there.
Wow.
So that was exciting. But you know, I got to try some local, try some local guck. So that was good.
That's a bit of a day.
Yeah, it was fun. I was in Turkey. For some reason, my stomach wasn't feeling that great. And I had just gotten into car and we're driving. And I said to the driver, we're going to Antalya, which is on the southern coast, the Mediterranean coast, which is just a spectacular part of Turkey. And I said to my driver, I said, I need to use toilet. And he said, oh, yeah, 2 hours.
Oh.
I said, no, how about 2 minutes? So he said, 2 minutes, yes. So 10 minutes later, we're driving, and I'm really impressing upon him now that I have to use it. So we get to, it was a park, and he said, bathroom in park or toilet in park. So there's a little concrete building. So I ran out of the car, and I'm looking for some Turkish lira because I know there's going to be an 85-year-old lady sitting at the door who's not going to let me in until I pay her. So I was all ready, and sure enough, there was somebody there. I gave him some money. I go inside. There's three stalls with no doors on. Unfortunately, there's no one else in there. Across from them was like a mirror with a trough for washing hands. So here I am, and just in the nick of time, and then I realized that my toilet paper was in my backpack in the car, and being a Muslim country, they had taps, right, with a hose,
yeah,
which I'd used before, and that was fine. So I turn the water on, nothing comes out of the tap. And the hose is maybe, I don't know, what is it, like maybe 15, 20 centimeters long. And I'm holding it, and I'm turning the tap, nothing comes out. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, you know, I turn a little further, nothing. So I'm just about to go and kind of go into the next cubicle. When the water comes out of this tap, and just like the air coming out of a balloon that you let go of, and there is water everywhere. I'm covered from top to bottom. I'm soaking wet. I glance up, and there is a lady who had walked in that I didn't know, and she was washing her hands and looking at the mirror and killing herself laughing. So now I'm totally embarrassed and soaking wet. So I get back in the car, and I said to the driver, he looked and he said, "What happened?" I said, "Just go. Let's not talk." So we continue on. Life goes on. We finally get to Antalya. I was pretty dried out by then. He finds this cute little restaurant right on the water, and it was just beautiful. Ordered a really nice meal. And as we're waiting for the food, I look over and there's a table with four people on it. One of them was the lady that I had ran into in the bathroom. And she looks at me, and then she says something to her friend, who also looks at me, and the two of them are laughing. And now I'm totally embarrassed all over again. So when the food came, I just said to the driver, I said, "Let's just pack this up and take it to go."
Too much. Oh, that's hysterical. Yep.
That was fun.
Those are good times. We are going to do the on the fly section. Are you ready?
Okay.
I try to do this in a rapid fire, but I'm not very good at it because it always interests me to ask more questions. Okay, number one.
Yes.
What and where was your first trip that gave you the travel bug?
To Luxembourg when I was 6 months old.
Oh, you remember that?
No. But you did say first trip.
Okay, fine. And you think that's what gave you the travel bug?
Sure.
Okay. Number two, what country do you think has the best food experience?
What do you like to eat? I mean, it really depends on what you want to eat. I think every country has great food experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Every country has unique food.
Yes.
A lot of that food I'm not going to touch. I've eaten guinea pig in Bolivia. I've had kangaroo in Australia. What else? I've eaten snake in Thailand.
Ew.
Pigeon in Morocco. The Dutch, of course, are raised on eating rabbits and horse meat.
Wow.
But these are staples. So any food is a good experience, I think, especially when you're hungry.
That's true. Okay. Number three, what essential item do you bring with you on every trip?
Passport, camera. That's about it. Clothing.
Clothing, yes. Number four, what is the last book that you read about travel?
Probably a tour guide book. I don't read travel books. I don't read a lot of books at all. I enjoy writing them.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me a long time to read because, you know, English being a second language. Like, I can't do subtitles on television. I can't really.
Really? Still after all these years?
Yeah. Yeah. My brain has never developed past my eighth birthday, I guess. I cannot... I have trouble with subtitles on TV. I have to pause every time I want to read it.
Mm.
So it's the same with books. It takes me a long time to read. So I get frustrated. So I'd much rather watch the movie.
And you've written 11 books, I read. Is that right?
Oh, 13. I'm on my 13th.
Okay, well, you need to update that part on your website. What are your books about?
Well, the first four I mentioned were spy novels.
Right.
And they just take place all over the world, different things that happen. And they're based on an actual fact, and then I go into fiction. So the first chapter is usually something that happened in real life, and then the rest is fictitious. I've done a couple of photography books on the Galapagos and Easter Island, a book on lighting and so forth. And I've done some local historical type books.
Nice.
So, and I've got a travel book, which is a selection of articles that I've written for the magazine that I write travel for.
Oh, wow. You are a busy person. Okay. Number five.
There's more. Go ahead.
Clearly you are not reading. Number five, is there a certain item or souvenir that you look for on each trip from a country, and what would that be?
Actually, no. I stopped collecting souvenirs at country number 7 or 8 because what do you do with them? So photography is it. I take photos. We do have pictures of my wife and I in front of a monument in whatever country we've been to. So at home, in one of the spare rooms, we've got a map that's about 8 feet by 6 feet of the world. And I update it every couple of years, and it's got little dots where I've been. It's got the flight paths, the places we've stayed, the dates and so forth, because I can't remember everything. And then around the perimeter of that, there are, you know, 100 some odd photographs of the two of us in front of the Eiffel Tower, in front of the pyramids, whatever a destination has to offer that's unique to that destination, we'll have a photo of that. But other than that, there are no souvenirs. We're not buying souvenirs.
That's fair. I can't stop buying scarves, but that says something about me. Number six, do you still have anything left on your bucket list? I mean, I know people who travel, the list gets longer and not shorter, but after 106 countries, what's still out there that you need to see and do?
I haven't done it yet, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about possibly going back to Egypt next year, if that works. Depends what happens with Korea. Really, the bucket list is a developing project. It's not something where I write down, you know, I want to see this or I want to see that. Yeah, sure, I want to see something, I suppose. You know, I don't know what it would be offhand. But, you know, if you're sitting at home, you're watching television, you're watching some sort of a program with David Suzuki in Indonesia or something, and you say, oh, my goodness, there's orangutans in Malaysia. Maybe we should go to Bora Bora and see the orangutan. You know, that it just develops.
Yes,
right?
Yes, for sure.
Not that I would probably do that, but we talked about go to Rwanda and see the gorilla reserve, the silverback gorilla reserves. But it's just horrendously expensive now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the safest place in the world to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm adverse to being, you know, shot.
Right.
Or something in a different location. It bothers me. So
has where you wanted to go next changed over the course of COVID? Because for me, yeah, like a year ago, I wanted to go somewhere very different than where I would like to go once I'm allowed to go somewhere.
No, absolutely not. I would not let something like that stand in my way. Just like the last trip I did was Israel just before the pandemic. And, you know, there's never a good time to go to Israel because the chances of getting blown up by somebody is much greater than it is in Port Perry. So does that stop me from going? No, I don't think so. It makes me more cautious. And obviously I'm not reckless. I'm not going to go to a country that's in the middle of a war.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, look at the fighting that's breaking out in Israel right now in Jerusalem. That's happening as we speak. You know, you can't pin that. Same with Egypt. You know, yeah, it could be dangerous. It probably isn't. You know, from a tourist perspective, it's probably not. You know, I mean, you can be cautious about everything and be concerned about everything. And consequently, you get hit by a bus when you step out of your front door.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You have to be careful. You don't, as I say, you don't want to be reckless, but you don't want to live your life around. Because somebody told me a long time ago, after 9/11, that terrorism is not something happening; it's the fear of something happening, and I think that's very true.
Israel was the last place that you were before COVID?
Yes.
Yeah, I was
absolutely.
I was in Jordan right before COVID, so we were in the same part of the world.
I combined the two.
Oh, did you?
I did Jordan too.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is.
I loved it.
I know.
Yeah.
30,000 steps in Petra.
Yes. Yes.
I think I won an award from Apple, my Apple Watch, in 40 degree temperature.
I know. It was very hot. I felt the same. I mean, yeah. I was there quite early in the morning when it was still very cold. And then by the afternoon, I was dying of heat. So, but a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah.
Okay. So Israel was the last place you were, and Korea is probably going to be the next place that you go to.
Yes, unless I lose the trip.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, here's the big one, Jonathan.
Oh,
are you ready?
Yes.
This is the one that either makes people love or hate me. Fly, discover, experience, repeat. So this is the Fly Travel Radio mantra. So if you could replace the words discover and experience with your own words about your reflections on travel and adventure, what would you say?
I could see where people would love or hate you on that. Did you come up with that slogan?
I sure did.
Where did you get that from?
My beautiful imagination. I mean, I think probably there were other things similar happening, and I don't know. It just came.
I'm just trying to milk the question past the time allotment that we have. I don't know how I would change. To me, I think it's an individual thing. Traveling is very, very personal. It's only for you. It's the way you want to do it should be the most important thing. My personal reflection is if you compare it to reading a book, because we've talked about books, I think if travel is a book, people who don't do it get to read one page, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. I like that. I mean, you totally didn't answer the question, but I like where you went with it.
Well, I mean, I could replace the word discover and experience, but I'd have to get a thesaurus at first.
Well, Jonathan, we are out of time, but I know that this could go on for 4 hours, as you said. But people can find you on Photos N, photos like the letter N, photosntravel.com. Right. Are you also on Instagram and Facebook?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. Every day I do a photo, John's pick of the day, and I put a photo up on Instagram. I have Facebook accounts, LinkedIn, Twitter, and I'm trying to get into TikTok, but I don't know how to dance, so I'm not sure I'm going to succeed at that.
And is everything under Photos and Travel, all of your platforms?
Yeah, usually if you either Google my name or Photos and Travel, that you'll find me one way or another.
Okay.
And if you can't, then it's not meant to be.
What a pleasure it has been to have you on Fly. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Yeah, pleasure's mine. It was fun. Thank you.
It was fun, yes. Okay, so people should definitely follow Jonathan. And I will also post the links on my Facebook platform and Instagram as well. So thank you so much, Jonathan.
Excellent. Thank you.
Fly.